From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The LGBT community woke up to Trump tweets Wednesday morning. Transgender individuals banned from the U.S. military in any capacity. That same day, the Department of Justice filed a court brief. Sexual orientation not protected, they said, under the Civil Rights Act. And there was more. Donald Trump was relatively warm on the campaign trail toward gay rights. What's happening? This hour, On Point, Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, and LGBTQ Americans Now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you think about Trump's ban on transgender soldiers, the Department of Justice take on civil rights? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Last summer, here was Donald Trump. This was his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention. Of course, this had come in the wake of the killing of 49 people at the gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Candidate Trump connected protecting the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community to the fight against ISIS.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. Believe me.
Believe him. That was Donald Trump last summer this time when he was coming in at the Cleveland convention, the GOP convention. Last week, a tweet comes out, transgender out of the U.S. military. Here talking with MSNBC on Capitol Hill was Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch. Well, here he was.
Why should we hold that against them? And they're human beings. And many of them are extremely talented human beings. So, you know, we should be open to everybody.
And from the American Civil Liberties Union on Thursday, James Isaacs said the LGBT community feels targeted. Here he was after the Trump tweet.
I think the community feels very much under attack and under siege by this administration. In a very real sense, it's the administration's anti-LGBT day.
We're going to look at what's going on with the attitude of this administration on this front. Joining me now from Provincetown, Massachusetts is Andrew Sullivan, political commentator, writer-at-large for New York Magazine, former editor of The New Republic, author of The Conservative Soul and Virtually Normal. Andrew Sullivan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What do you think is happening here between the Department of Justice and its friend of the court brief last week saying no, sexual orientation is not covered in the Civil Rights Act? The president with his tweet, Sam Brownback being named to an international position on religious freedom. He's been very openly opposed to gay marriage, among other gay rights. What do you see going on, Andrew?
I wish I could see something very coherent, but I'm afraid I don't, really. I think that the transgender troop ban seems to be a response by Trump to the possibility that his spending bill would not get through the Congress without the removal from it of the budget for spending on medical care for transgender troops, and impulsively just declared by Twitter that therefore all transgender troops should be banned in any capacity, which was far more, in fact, than anybody on the religious right was even asking for. The Justice Department case is really about whether sexual orientation is protected under sex discrimination, which is a complicated issue. I wouldn't put too much emphasis on it. As for everything else, I mean, I think the key thing from my point of view is that if the religious right did not get what they wanted, which was this broad religious freedom position on by the administration, and it, Gorsuch, the new Supreme Court justice, has declared marriage equality settled law, even though they are quibbling at the edges. My sense is that this is more chaos than targeting. But nonetheless, obviously, targeting troops who are transgender when the military is itself conducting its own investigation into this, its own inquiry into this, under the normal rules and procedures of the military, is obviously a terrible attack upon transgender troops. And also, I would add, an attack on the military itself, which should be able to govern itself by rules and procedures with a commander-in-chief that goes through the normal channels of command. And I think that what you're seeing now is is a pushback, amazingly, as you heard, from Orrin Hatch. I mean, goodness, would you ever have believed Orrin Hatch would be on the record saying what he just said about transgender troops? And so what we're seeing now is the pushback from that. I don't believe, I seriously don't, that the Trump administration is motivated by an anti-gay animus. I think it has those elements within it, and I think it is a chaotic administration, and I think this president did something really rash and stupid and callous this week. But I'm not going to go so far as to think we're under siege.
Well, look at how all this may play out. I mean, you go back to, again, last summer. This was the end of June last summer, and this was then Defense Secretary Ash Carter announcing that what had been a ban on transgender troops would be lifted. Carter, his team had studied the issue for a year. He said that although they were relatively few in number, transgender soldiers, said the Defense Secretary, were talented and trained Americans who served their country with honor and distinction.
Army Chief of Staff General Milley recently reminded us of this when he said, and I quote him, "The United States Army is open to all Americans who meet the standard, regardless of who they are. Embedded within our Constitution is that very principle, that all Americans are free and equal. And we as an Army are sworn to protect and defend that very principle. And we are sworn to even die for that principle. So if we in uniform are willing to die for that principle, then we in uniform should be willing to live by that principle."
That was last year. Last week, the president said, no, not in this military. And of course, I mean, the numbers are all over, but anywhere from 1,500 to 15,000 could be affected by it, serving military. At a White House press briefing last week, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders sort of evaded reporters' questions about how this might be implemented. Here's how she responded to one reporter's question about the president's tweet.
"Does that mean that those that are now in theater, that are now deployed to Afghanistan, for example, will have to be immediately sent home and
again,
discharged?"
Again, the implementation policy is going to be something that the White House and the Department of Defense have to work together to lawfully determine. And, you know, I would imagine the Department of Defense will be the lead on that and keep you posted as that takes place.
Andrew Sullivan joins us. Andrew, have you been following how this is playing through? There was question right off the bat about whether or not a tweet constitutes an order, whether this tweet was the beginning and end of this and it was all done. The Joint Chiefs of Staff came back and said, no, it doesn't, and we need sort of proper procedures here before we can proceed. Do you have any doubt, though, that this will, in essence, become the new Pentagon policy, Andrew?
I do have a little doubt. But the trouble with having a commander-in-chief who is completely unfit to be commander-in-chief is that you can quarantine him to some extent. I mean, you can keep going in some respects without him being involved. But when he does something like this, even though it is outside the normal channels, it is certainly irrelevant to the chain of command. It is just simply his mouthing off in public. Nonetheless, as a human being, as an individual person, he is the commander-in-chief, and he just gave a directive. My sense is that the military is scrambling at this point to figure out what to do. I suspect that there will be considerable resistance to this, that they will maybe postpone something until this review continues. But I don't know what's going on in the inner workings of Jim Mattis's mind at this point. I mean, he was on vacation last week. He's back now. So we'll see what happens. It would be quite remarkable if the U.S. military resisted such a thing and went about its business in due course. On the other hand, it is quite remarkable that a president would be behaving this way. So we are in completely uncharted territory here because we have someone in the White House who simply should not be in the White House doing things he doesn't understand. And what really staggers me is the absolute, I would call it sociopathic indifference to the lives and careers and dignity of these people serving our country. I mean, if you're going to have a policy that assesses whether this is difficult to enforce, what the issues are, I think that's completely legitimate to figure that out. And let's face it, this was suddenly and only recently made possible, right? Because only last year the transgender troops were allowed. So we'll see how this goes forward. I don't know. I happen to think that he has framed the issue on transgender people in the way that the religious right least wants it to be framed. What they want is to have a fight over bathrooms or about gender reassignment surgery or to use the trans issue to gin up support on the religious right. What he has done is by making this about people serving their country, transgender people who are being defended now by Richard Shelby of Alabama, as well as Orrin Hatch of Utah, is fight this battle on the worst possible terrain for the religious right. And if you listen to what the religious right is saying internally on their blogs and in their own web presence, you'll find them fearing that this is actually a disaster. The way that Trump has done this so cruelly, randomly, and out of line against people who are clearly patriots is probably going to backfire on him in some way. And you've noticed there has not been an outcry on the Republican right about this. A couple of people in the usual suspects have done so. But what was remarkable was the silence about this. This is a rogue president doing something rogue and playing with the rights of people who should be defended. And we'll see exactly how that follows through. It's in the context of the rest of the presidency in which the Congress is attempting to run the country by normal rules and procedures, and we have a president who can't abide by them.
He went beyond, as you say, what the religious right was asking for here. They didn't want the Pentagon to pay, as I understand it, for gender reassignment surgery, which would have cost a few million a year, perhaps. And the president comes with this flat ban.
Yeah, it's absurd. I mean, they might have, if they wanted to pick a fight on gender reassignment surgery at its cost, you can see how that might have had some plausibility to it. But when he then comes out and says something flatly discriminatory, and let's face it, he has just said, I mean, if you're going to challenge this in court, he has simply declared an animus on the basis of what he called tremendous costs, which we now know are negligible costs for gender reassignment surgery, to the entire class of people. Again, this is a man completely out of control who does not understand either what the rule of law is or what the military can do. On the other hand,
Andrew, hold the thought. We're right up against a break here. Andrew Sullivan, please stand by there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about LGBTQ rights and standing in the time of Donald Trump. Who will serve in our military? What will be protected as civil rights? Andrew Sullivan is with us, political commentator, writer-at-large for New York Magazine, author of The Conservative Soul, joins us from Provincetown, Massachusetts today. You can join us as well. What did you think of the president's tweet saying he was banning transgender service in the U.S. military? What do you think of Jeff Sessions' Justice Department saying sexual orientation is not covered, protected under civil rights law? And is the LGBT community now under attack by the Trump administration, or is that too much to say? Army Chief of Staff General Mark Milley said Thursday in an appearance at the National Press Club that the military will work through the new guidance from President Trump when he gets a formal directive from the White House through proper channels, and that in the meantime, all soldiers will continue to be treated with respect.
It should be no surprise to anyone, but the entire force, the entire chain of command will, always has, will today, and will tomorrow, and always should treat every single soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, Coast Guardsman, with dignity and respect for their service and the cloth of our nation, bar none.
Bar none, he says. Their former Army Secretary Eric Fanning, the first openly gay leader of any U.S. military branch, described the way transgender service members are likely feeling in the wake of the president's tweet. Here he was last week on NBC's Today Show.
If you're a transgender service member anywhere in the world, you are already nervous by what you were hearing. And now you're probably very confused and very frightened about what the future holds for you when your commander-in-chief tweets a message like this, basically dismissing your service.
Former Army Secretary there. Andrew Sullivan, please stand by. Rachel Tiven joins us right now as well from New York, Chief Executive Officer at Lambda Legal, country's oldest and largest LGBT legal organization. She's a lawyer, strategist, spokesperson for the movement there. Rachel Tiven, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Jonathan Turley joins us in a moment as well. I want to look at where the Department of Justice has gone. But first, on the Pentagon front, I mean, you're a kind of legal defenders here. Do you see room to come in here legally and wrangle with this, fight this tweet by the president? Or is this now, in your view, going to become, is the new U.S. military policy, period?
Well, the president has really messed with the wrong people here by picking on volunteers who are serving their country honorably. The president has really attacked not just transgender members of the military, but trans and LGB people everywhere. And Lambda Legal has been fighting for open military service for LGBT people since the 1970s. And with OutServe and SLDN, our partners that represent military service members and veterans, we will sue and we will win.
In what kind of forum would you sue over this? And what's the track record on this front?
Well, it was a long, long, long fight. The end of the don't ask, don't tell policy that barred open military service by lesbian, gay, and bisexual members of the military took a very long time and was a combination of litigation and action by Congress, and ultimately implemented by the Defense Department. And subsequently, the Defense Department has been implementing open military service for transgender service members without incident and with an enormous amount of success. And, you know, I think what's really notable about what happened last week is that the public visibility for transgender adults who are serving their country honorably was suddenly everywhere, and that people could see how accomplished, how skilled, how proud trans people are, and that the president's attack was really met with, you know, as you said, as Andrew said, from, you know, everyone from Orrin Hatch to Joni Ernst to the majority of the American public. By a Reuters poll out today, says 58% of people support open service by trans people in the military, and I think that that's really, I mean, that to the extent that the president thought that he could pick on LGBT people and particularly on trans people and that no one would care, he clearly miscalculated.
Andrew Sullivan, do you see a legal response stopping this, a challenge perhaps from Rachel's organization, or is this something that's ultimately decided at the ballot box? Does this go back to politics?
Well, I think what you found with the ban on openly gay people in the military, in the end, you have to go to Congress. I mean, this is the commander-in-chief has enormous power, and this is the thing that makes it problematic. He has enormous power over the troops he commands and what he does. But there are other issues here, such as whether the executive branch can simply bar an entire class of people for no actual rational reasons. I think the other thing is, since trans people are already being part of the military openly, what you're doing is not proposing to keep a policy to ban them, but to actually take people already in it who are openly serving and throw them out. And that really affects, I think, a lot of people. They feel like if this is going okay, if there haven't been any incidents, if these people are serving honorably and extremely well, as people even like Orrin Hatch are conceding, then why are we doing this? Why are we creating this huge firestorm? The truth is, on this issue and on those cultural issues, the group that brings up the question and makes us all have to worry about it tends to lose. And I wonder if they're going to have to, if he's going to have to climb down on this. He doesn't, I mean, I honestly think it was a spur of the moment attempt, a callous and ridiculous attempt to get his spending bill through. And he just did it without consulting anybody. And I wonder if there's a chance, a small chance, that it can simply be ignored or we can continue with the policy or we can defer it in such a way it doesn't happen.
Let's go to Ann in Rock Hill, South Carolina, calling us. Ann, hi, thanks for calling. You're on with Andrew Sullivan and Rachel Tiven.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say, regarding the reasoning for this repugnant his idea, mm-hmm, of getting rid of transgender people in the military, I find his reasoning of the medical expenses being too high very ironic, given the fact that he can go off to Mar-a-Lago and cost the taxpayers far more on a weekly basis.
It's true. I have seen those numbers that a few trips to Mar-a-Lago is a couple of million bucks, and the annual cost to the U.S. military, the medical treatment that's being targeted here,
not a whole lot more than that. True, in strict financial terms, it doesn't look like it adds up. That's not all he talked about. And I appreciate your call. Teresa in Farmington Hills, Michigan. Teresa, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I understand these people are hormonally challenged. I do holistic medicine, and I understand about the hormones when they're out of balance. And this becomes an emotional thing. And Trump is looking at, we need a strong military. We don't want weak links in it. And I think that's where he's coming from. And with emotional people that are already, you know, imbalanced and they're upset about being transgender and all these things, that would cause a weak link. And what, you know, you have to get your buddies back in the military. You got to make quick decisions. You can't be emotional. You have to be, you know, working with a strong mind.
Teresa, are you so confident that you're reading that right? I mean, the Pentagon went in, they did big studies that came out and said, you know what, this will work for us and we don't have a problem with this. Now, the president, Rachel.
Yeah, they have to be PC. I know, because Trump is a strong, he's a mean ma dicker, we know that. And that's what he wants. He wants a strong military. And trust me, I worked with transgender people. I love them, you know. And this is a sad issue. It's an emotional issue. But in the military, we can't afford emotional. We need strong men and women, you know, who don't have that issue. And I understand that.
I'm just pointing out, Teresa, that when the Pentagon looked at this and studied it, they did not come to the conclusion that you're asserting here, that these people aren't strong. Now, you say that's just PC. Andrew Sullivan, did you follow that Pentagon inquiry into the implications of regularizing transgender service?
Yes. My point would simply be, we're all hormonally challenged. I mean, the military without testosterone would be a much more reduced force in terms of its aggression. There's no difference, absolutely no difference, between the hormones that exist in a cisgender person and the hormones that are operating in a transgender person. None whatsoever. If the question is hormones, then there should be no men in the military, because we're often, especially young men, who are hormonally at their peak in terms of production of testosterone. So there's simply no difference.
But Teresa's suggesting that hormonal profile is what makes a strong military.
I just want to clarify here. The only thing that transgender soldiers and service members are emotional about is being fired. I mean, this is really, I mean, the question is, when people who are doing their job honorably are attacked by their commander-in-chief because of really outright discrimination and outright meanness, that's really, I mean, the only thing that Americans should be saying to transgender service members is thank you.
I want to turn to the...
Add,
yes, Andrew.
If I might, that by adding in any capacity, the president has also barred transgender troops from even serving food or for being a medical officer or for being someone, the many, many people who are in the military who aren't actually on the front line fighting. And that seems to me to be, there's no, even if one were to accept the caller's question, which I don't, I think it's just empirically untrue, but if one were, what possible justification for that?
I want to turn to the Department of Justice and their moves on the front of civil rights and the Civil Rights Act. A friend of the court brief filed saying that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act does not prohibit discrimination because of sexual orientation. Rachel Tiven, this is not a new position. I don't think the Obama administration exactly asserted that it fully covered sexual orientation. So what's the shift what's different? What's changed with the Attorney General's action here, the Department of Justice action here?
Well, first, I think it's important to frame what this is about, right? This is about jobs. This is about if you are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, can you get a job and can you keep a job? And are you protected at work from discrimination based on your sexual orientation or your gender identity? And what happened here is that the Justice Department went out of its way to enter into a case where their opinion was not required by the court to say that they oppose a reading of the Civil Rights Act that protects the jobs of LGBT people.
This is a case of a skydiving company and an employee there, I guess, who revealed his sexual orientation to a customer, later lost his job, and the suit claims that it was because of his sexual orientation. What about the Obama administration's stance on this, Rachel?
Well, the Obama administration's stance was certainly much more favorable, and where we where we are right now is looking at how do you get to the Supreme Court taking up this issue, because that's really what needs to happen next. Where we are is that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has clearly said that sexual orientation discrimination is a form of sex discrimination. The Justice Department is now saying that it's not. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, sitting as a full court, ruled in Lambda's case this past spring that, of course, sexual orientation discrimination is a form of sex discrimination. As the court said, it would require considerable calisthenics to remove the sex from sexual orientation, meaning that when someone is fired because they're gay, someone like Donald Zarda, who is a skydiving instructor, it's because of really of two reasons. He doesn't act like a man is supposed to act, right? He's not conforming to a stereotype about the way men are by being gay. And that if you changed only one factor in the analysis of his case, right? If, for example, you have a gay man who's married to a man and he loses his job because he's married to a man, well, if you were a woman married to a man, he wouldn't have lost his job. Right. So by a really simple but for analysis, what you get to is the reason the person was fired because of the way that they act, and it doesn't conform to sex stereotypes, and it isn't the way that someone of a different sex would be treated in that same circumstance. And that adds up to sex discrimination. The Justice Department has said, basically, because gay men and lesbians would be treated similarly, there's no sex discrimination here, because you would be treated, because you'd be fired as a lesbian woman and you'd be fired as a gay man, ergo there is no sex discrimination. And I think listeners can judge for themselves whether that seems like a fair and logical reading of the law.
Rachel Tibbins, stand by. Andrew Sullivan, Jonathan Turley joins us right now from Washington, professor of public interest at the George Washington University School of Law. Been paying attention to this. Jonathan Turley, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
What's the shift that you see in this Department of Justice step in with its friend of the court brief in this case?
Well, it certainly is a shift. The question before the Second Circuit deals really with the question of who should make this decision more than what the answer should be, at least from the perspective of the Justice Department. What they're arguing under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is that the act does not expressly include sexual orientation. It refers to just simply sex. Mm-hmm. And that question should be answered by Congress, that the court should not extend this into a very large and additional category of protection. There are very good arguments, as you just heard, that this is simply a matter of interpretation. But the position of the Justice Department is certainly not frivolous. You had courts that have agreed that this should be a matter for legislative change, not judicial interpretation. And in that sense, I think that Andrew is correct that you should probably distinguish the Second Circuit controversy, which is a matter worthy of all of this discussion, and also an equally important but different issue with regard to the transgender military personnel that have suddenly been said by the president that they have to leave the military. That's a different question in the sense that that goes to their constitutional protection as a group. And that's a very difficult question because sexual orientation has not been subject to the highest level of protection or scrutiny. If the government discriminates against someone for their race or religion, they have to satisfy what's called a strict scrutiny test, which is a very demanding test that they have to show is very compelling governmental interest. If you're not in one of those groups, it doesn't mean that the government can discriminate against you. What it means is that they have a lower standard or burden to show in court, a rational basis test. And so the two controversies will proceed on different tracks. Both have their challenges.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about LGBTQ rights and standing in the time of Donald Trump. Who will serve in our military? What will be protected as civil rights? Jonathan Turley is with us from George Washington University School of Law. Rachel Tiven is here, CEO of Lambda Legal, country's oldest, largest LGBT legal organization. Andrew Sullivan is with us, former editor of The New Republic, writer-at-large for New York Magazine, author of The Conservative Soul and Virtually Normal. You can join us this hour as well. Are we going backwards here? And where are your sympathies, your red lines? What will all this mean for our military, for our sense of who has what rights in this country? Lots of callers for all three of you. Brian in Knoxville, Tennessee. Brian, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interest in this because my daughter, she's transgender. She's future possibly being a boy. And my concern is that, if it's LGBT as a basis for the military, I don't believe there should be a ban. The only thing I see as a possibility is as a medical condition, whereas using the military or the U.S. government as a basis for having an operation in the future using the taxpayers' money.
So you're saying your own daughter is transgender, or maybe you wouldn't oppose her service in the military, but you don't think the U.S. government should pay for the reassignment surgery?
That is correct.
Andrew Sullivan, what about it?
Well, I think there you have a reason for arguing that, in fact, the expense of the medical stuff is and would have been, as the religious right believes, a kind of utilitarian use. I would add that 10 times as much money as is spent on gender reassignment surgery is spent on Viagra for the military. So if the money for erectile dysfunction is there, I think the money for the relatively tiny minority of people who want medical sexual reassignment surgery is certainly there. I really think that, even though it could have salience politically, I think the truth is that Trump has thrown that out the window, and by declaring the entire category of transgender troops unable to serve, quote unquote, in any capacity, he's gone far beyond anything that might be reasonable, and that the caller might even defend. I think this shows the political salience of the point the religious right were trying to do, but Trump has completely changed the subject.
I appreciate your call there from Tennessee. Tony in Jamestown, New York. Tony, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a trans service member currently serving in the U.S. Army, and I have two comments. The first is people continually talk about the idea of gender confirmation surgery and its exorbitant cost. Not all of us seek the surgeries. I, for one, do not have any intent of having any surgeries done to me. And so the cost is even lower than what we're thinking about in the public realm. The second comment I have is that I myself know several of my fellow trans service members, and none of us have experienced any disruptions in our unit. None of us have experienced any discrimination at the hands of our battles. I just think that this whole idea that we cause some kind of disruption in military readiness is absolutely erroneous. There's no basis in reality for it.
What service are you in? What capacity are you serving in, Tony? And what's been your, experience of just the day-to-day life as transgender in military life?
Well, I'm currently serving in the U.S. Army National Guard. I just got back from a deployment overseas. I'm a religious affairs NCO, so I work with the chaplain corps.
Okay.
And actually, the Unitarian Universalist chaplaincy is my eventual goal here.
Okay.
But day to day, people that ask me about it, or hey, by the way, I'm in this community. I'm affected by this. 98% of the time, it's an academic interest. Explain that to me. What does that mean? Oh, I didn't know. I never once have I received some kind of derogatory comment.
Is it an open status that you live in, Tony, or is it a kind of don't ask, don't tell quiet, or help us understand?
Oh, no, sir. Mm-hmm. No, sir. I would not dream of hiding. Mm-hmm. I'm an open book for myself, my friends, my family. And when people ask me in the military, hey, what's your status? I say, hey, I'm a trans service member. I actually identify with the term gender queer more specifically, but
Do you think President Trump's
no
tweet
to hide.
Do you think President Trump's tweet means that you are or will soon be out of the service?
Actually, I don't. Several years ago, we got a new sergeant major of the Army, and there was a whole debate about tattoos below the sleeve line. This became a discourse in the Army. We had to have a database of tattoos and people that had tattoos and where they were on their bodies so their careers wouldn't be affected. If we have to have databases and you know, policies and regulations surrounding tattoos for people who are already serving, how could you possibly take an entire people group and say, now you have to be kicked out? That just doesn't, it's not the way we work. It's not the way the military works at all.
Tony, I really appreciate your call. Jonathan Turley, Rachel Tibbin says her group, Lambda Legal, will challenge this tweet, the gist of this tweet, legally. Where do you think the legal system might come down on this, Jonathan?
Well, it's very hard to say, because I think it is certainly true that we have seen a very difficult challenge for these groups, but ultimately we've seen great success. Obergefell in 2015 on same-sex marriage was a historic moment that came from hard litigation and hard work, both legally and politically. The challenges, however, should not be underestimated. What trans military personnel have to argue under the current standard is that this would not even meet the low test of a rational basis scrutiny. Now, rational basis tests are notoriously easy to satisfy. It doesn't mean that they're always satisfied. In Romer v. Evans, for example, you had a Colorado referendum that was struck down by the court 6-3. It was targeting homosexual and lesbians who would be protected as a class in the state. The court rejected that under the lower standard of rational basis, and the court said that you cannot satisfy a legitimate government interest by simply a desire to harm what the court called a politically unpopular group. So even if you're not in one of these higher protected groups, it doesn't mean the government can discriminate against you. The problem here, in addition to the low standard of scrutiny, is this enormous deference given to the military by the courts. Particularly after the Civil War, the Supreme Court began to give greater and greater deference to the military to preserve good order and discipline. And there are many cases where that deference became almost blind deference. So these groups are going to have the challenge not just of showing the government can't meet the lowest standard of review, but that they cannot do that even with this great deference historically shown to the military.
What about?
I just want to jump in here, Tom.
Rachel,
can,
please,
can I jump in to say that I think it's really important to note that we are winning cases on behalf of transgender people that apply intermediate scrutiny, which is what you get for sex differences under the law, right? Which is heightened scrutiny, and the government does have to meet a much higher burden in showing that there was a reason that they're treating people differently based on sex. So we've won those cases in employment contexts, we've won those cases in school contexts, and applying the Civil Rights Act clearly to sex discrimination when transgender people are harmed.
I want to look at the Civil Rights Act for a minute. Jonathan, here we have a challenge from Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice. But under even the Obama administration, this was not fully cemented, sexual orientation as covered by the Civil Rights Act. What's the evolution here? And if we end up in a legal fight over this and it goes to the Supreme Court, do you see this on track to be affirmed as part of what the Civil Rights Act covers?
I have to tell you, I think that this could go very easily either way, because it's not just simply a question of what should be decided, but who should decide it. You have this terrible case, Zarda versus Altitude Express. Altitude Express is this company that fired this guy simply because he revealed his orientation, which, by the way, he revealed because he wanted to make a woman feel more comfortable out of the fact that they would be basically strapped together in this tandem jump. And so he's doing it to try to make her feel more at ease, and her boyfriend objected to Altitude Express, and they fired Zarda, who later tragically died in a
right.
skydiving accident.
But this is the deal where a beginning skydiver would go with the instructor, and you're kind of strapped together. And he was wanting to put her at ease and saying, "Look, this is not a. I guess I don't know what he said, but I'm gay. Don't worry about it."
That's right. And so he was trying to really do his job. He was trying to mm-hmm. make her feel more comfortable being in close contact yep. with a male. Now, putting that aside, you still have this question where the law refers to sex and whether it can be extended to sexual orientation. There are many judges who are entirely in favor of equal protection, entirely in favor with the result of extending this to sexual orientation, who will not do that because they feel that this is something that has to be decided by the political branches, specifically Congress. And so you can have judges who aren't discriminatory in any way who feel as a constitutional matter this should not be something decided in the courts. And thus far, that is what has occurred here. Now, the Second Circuit panel supported the district court in saying, nope, we can't extend this to sexual orientation. But one advantage I would give to the challengers on this is that the panel basically said, look, the full Second Circuit has to make this decision because there's previous precedent here. So as a panel of just three judges, we shouldn't do this. So it is possible for the Second Circuit to change this result. But at the end of the day, this is an issue that seems like it will head to the Supreme Court. Now there, you have an interesting lineup. You have Justice Kennedy, who often votes with the conservatives on many issues, but has been a leader on the court in supporting gay rights and same-sex marriage and related issues. The interesting thing is that the court decided to stay a case recently involving the sort of bathroom controversy. This had gone all the way up to the court, and Kennedy actually voted to stay that so that the court did not basically put a decision favorable to the community on hold. So everything is ripe for a review, but my guess is that Justice Gorsuch is unlikely to support this type of interpretation.
Which would mean a review would go against including sexual orientation under the Civil Rights Act?
I think a review would once again come down to Kennedy in all likelihood, and he has been the deciding factor. If the court were to change by just one justice, I think that change would not be favorable towards those wanting to extend these protections.
And there's been a lot of speculation about just that change with Justice Kennedy. Rachel, I heard you there.
Sure. I think what we have right now is a circuit split. We have the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has already sat as a full court and said resoundingly that this is a form of sex discrimination. The Second Circuit is about to take up this case as a full court, which they do, I think it's worth noting, extremely rarely. Mm-hmm. This will be the third time since 2011 that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals has sat together to discuss anything. So it really is. So
it's a big deal. They're treating it with weight.
They're treating it with an enormous amount of weight, and I think that's in the absence of guidance from the Supreme Court. And since the 11th Circuit ruled against Lambda Legal's client, Jamaica Evans, a woman who was fired from her job as a security guard at a hospital in Georgia because she is a lesbian, and we are appealing that case to the Supreme Court because it really is time for the Supreme Court to take up this issue. There is a significant circuit split, and people's lives and livelihoods are at stake.
Andrew Sullivan said at the top of the hour, despite these things, he does not see the LGBTQ community under siege from the Trump administration. Are you on board with that, Rachel?
Unfortunately, I disagree. I think Andrew's right about a lot of things, but I don't agree with him here. I think that we are under siege. And unfortunately, the people who lost the culture war because they are not interested in seeing people's full humanity are now controlling the federal government. And the people running the agencies that control the lives of millions and millions and millions of Americans are people who built their careers hating LGBT people. And That means that they control the agencies that control all of our lives. And it's really an extremely dangerous situation. And I think that we have to look at the administration's actions, not their words, right? It doesn't matter if you have gay friends. It doesn't matter if Justice Gorsuch has gay friends. It doesn't matter if Betsy DeVos has gay friends. It doesn't matter if Donald Trump has gay friends. What they're doing is hurting LGBT people.
Andrew, you sounded more sanguine. Are you?
I am, and I really disagree with the idea that anybody who might oppose the things that Grace and I might agree with are somehow hating. I think that kind of language is divisive and corrosive. The truth is, what Rachel said, is that they have lost the culture war. If they've lost it, how are we under siege? They feel under siege right now. They feel under siege because their entire world has been turned upside down. There is an obvious political solution to this. If you want to pass a federal non-employment non-discrimination act, which has vast majority support in the country, then go ahead and pass it. There are employment non-discrimination laws all around the country in various states and cities that protect this altogether. To argue that we should bypass the political process when we have the stronger arguments and do this through the courts by a rather strained analysis of sex discrimination, which is different than sexual orientation, I think is to do an end run around the democratic process. We have the majority of people in favor of not firing people, being able to fire people because they're gay. We should continue to make that case. We should not always try to impose this by the courts. We should acknowledge that the Trump administration has allowed and continues gay people in the military service, equal marriage. These are huge gains that gay people have made in the last 8 years. And to say this few other pathetic attempts to throw a few sops to the religious right, when the key sop, which was the Religious Freedom Act, they have dropped, to say then that we're under siege.
Andrew, we're losing you just as you make the point, but I think we've got it. Voters, it sounds like the final civil rights piece may be back in your lap. I want to thank all three of you for being with us. Andrew Sullivan, Rachel Tiven at Lambda Legal, Jonathan Turley at George Washington University School of Law. Our great thanks to all three of you for being with us this hour. Terrific conversation. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.